recorded.
Welcome, everybody. This is Monday, February 21st. My name is Winfrey, and we are on the Winfrey Monday Night Simulcast Conference Call on BBS Radio. And those of you that got my notice this evening, about a half hour ago, every once a month, we have a call with my beloved guest, Carla Rucker. Carla is one of those people. You know, this call really has an underlying theme, and the theme is interdimensional communication, positive interdimensional communication. And Carla happens to be a pioneer in that, and that she channeled, I'm not sure if anyone in recent history has channeled the Ra Group than Carla Rucker, at least in 1981, and at least whether they identified themselves in that way. And what's unusual about her channelings is that, as far as I know, she's the first person to channel a group matrix, at least in a way that the group matrix introduced themselves as that. Perhaps other people have done it, but the concept was never explained. I'll ask Carla about this, and it was never explained to my knowledge prior to Carla's channeling. And what does that mean? That means that the voice was coming through Carla was not the individual soul, but it was a composite of many, 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 many souls. We can conjecture about how many. Could be hundreds of thousands, could be a million, could be 100. But nonetheless, as people were answering questions brought forth to her, as her source would answer questions, it would be a composite voice, at least that's how they explained themselves, that was answering the questions. And they called themselves a social memory complex. Let me mute everybody on the conference call. Are you guys on the call? Can you guys hear me on the conference call?
Yes.
Okay. You know, on this particular call, you might think about some questions. You know, we've gone through a lot of Mondays with Carla, and we've never put forth questions. Carla, is that okay if people come up with questions?
Oh, it's just fine. I do remember one wonderful time that we got a question from someone, and I ended up talking for a half an hour, so you have to watch me on that.
Well, I mean, do I have permission to interrupt you and say, cut it out, Carla?
Yeah, you do.
I do? Okay.
Your show.
Although you, well, you know what?
Yeah.
It's only my show if you believe in possession.
That's right. It's actually the creator's show. But I have a feeling that John Newsom, who sweated hard work for many years to put this together, would have a few things to say about that.
Right. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody that's on the conference line so we get rid of some of the background noise.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. Entry chimes are off. Exit chimes are on.
Hang on.
Entry chimes are on. Exit chimes are off.
All right. I can't get this quite right, but what that means, what you guys that are listening on BBS Radio, is that we're on a conference call, and when people come into the call, every time they come in, it goes ding, ding. So as more people come into the call, I cut out the dings at that moment, and so we won't be interrupted. So, Carla, tell me, are you the first person to channel a matrix that identified itself as a matrix?
Well, I think I had it right. I have no idea what the actual composition is of so many well-known channeling sources of history, especially the ones that floated around Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophists. But I think, as far as I know as a researcher, that I'm probably the only medium of any age that has channeled a source that says that they are a social memory complex, or that says that they are a composite of many individuals who are speaking with one voice.
Right. That's what I thought. I don't mean that that no one else had ever channeled a social memory complex, and even maybe other people have channeled the Ra group. But oftentimes, in fact, most times, they're not really forthright in explaining this social memory complex idea, because it's such a sophisticated idea. And on one hand, it makes a lot of sense. But on the other hand, the real essence of the communications is the wisdom. And, you know, if you start going from, in many circumstances, if you started trying to give this new cosmology of how things work, it would get, people would miss the wisdom. So in your case, you brought through both. You brought through the cosmology and the wisdom as well. And how many do you think there were? Did Donna ever ask John Elkins?
My intelligence on that, no, he didn't. He asked how many people they were serving. How many people had called them here, and they said at that time it was 65 million people. But my best intelligence on that comes from research rather than what they said. And the research is on me, actually. When Don was investigating the possibility that there were wanderers, now he had done over 200 age regression hypnosis sessions by then. He was very experienced, and I had accompanied him on many of these hypnotic regressions and had heard people taken back before birth. But he wanted to hypnotize me because he had a keen idea that I was a wanderer, and we were exploring the idea of wanderers, or as George Hunt Williamson called them, apples, or those that come from elsewhere to serve on planet Earth in some hopefully helpful capacity. So he hypnotized me. I didn't think that I would be hypnotizable, but actually I was. And after they had induced a good sound trance state in me, then it was actually two people. Don was working with a guy named Larry Allison, who was also a very experienced hypnotic therapist. And after the hypnotic trance was induced, I was taken back before birth, and they explored a couple of lifetimes with me. Neither one was on this planet. In one, I finally found out why I'm so doggone scared of spiders, because I was on a planet that was not my planet of birth. It wasn't Earth, but it wasn't the planet I was born. I was trying to help save a civilization, and we were trying to rescue records that were half drowned in cataclysmic Earth changes on that planet. We were just bringing up basically library volumes from half-destroyed libraries and trying to put them someplace safe so that the civilization could be preserved. And the enemy was about, I would say about 14 or 15 feet tall, taller than most ceilings in most rooms by quite a bit. They looked metallic, and they looked like spiders. So now I know why I'm scared of spiders. But in another incarnation that they asked me to talk about, it was the one before coming to Earth. And I was standing and waiting with a fairly large group. I don't know how many, but I was telling them it was going to be okay, that it was going to be fun. And we were waiting for something. I'm not sure what. We weren't going by ship. We were going to move by thought. I guess we were waiting for everybody to get it together to go. And so in that lifetime, I was a member of a clan. It was a clan you chose to belong to when people were born into the clan at any age beyond a fairly young age, like any age beyond 7 or 8. You could choose to stay or you could choose to go. If it was really bothering you, you could choose to go. But most kids born within that particular group of people liked that group of people and wanted to stay. So I would say it's less than the planetary population of Ra. It's likely a fairly large group, probably in the hundreds of thousands, that decided that they wanted to serve as brothers and sisters of sorrow because they had heard the sorrowful cry of Earth, whose harvest was coming up and who had not yet found love. And we wanted to come and help them to find love. So that's the source of my information, and it's very subjective. On the other hand, were it not for the fact that it was recorded and typed out and that the transcript is right there, I would not remember any of this with any clarity because I wasn't told to remember everything when I woke up, and so it's all very hazy. But it's in mm-hmm. Secrets of the UFO, which is a book that Don and I wrote in 1976, summing up his research from 55 to 75, you know, a 20-year period in which he had done a tremendous amount of work. He'd been all over the United States. He had investigated physical UFOs. He'd investigated ghosts by going to seances. He'd done all these hypnotic regressions to check out reincarnation. So he wanted to put a bunch of this stuff down, and that's why we were working on that material then and why I got hypnotized. So I don't think it's the entire planetary population of Venus. I think that it's the population of that planet that wanted to serve in this particular way. And so I think we probably came maybe 100,000 strong, I don't know, a lot of people, more than I could see. And I think that the group that stayed home or in the influence of Venus probably does number in the millions. So mm-hmm. when you're listening to a social memory complex, you're probably listening to a clan within the population. But that would just be my guess. Don never asked about that.
I think that's what I think. I think they assign, or people volunteer for, I'm calling them people, but entities, I guess I should say. Entities.
Well, they're people, you know, they're just in a different density.
Yeah. Well, I mean, are they? But do they have bodies? Do they in the densities they're in?
Well, sure. I think in the electrical, you have a body straight through to the seventh density. The question is, what's it made of? In this mm-hmm. density, a physical vehicle is a chemical distillery, and it's made mostly of water, but it's got all kinds of chemicals in it, and it works like a physical machine. It works like a distillation machine that takes water that's got a lot of stuff in it, and it precipitates out the things that you don't want. And our body works the same mm-hmm. way. We take in the mm-hmm. food, we take in the nutrients from food, we precipitate out and eject from the body the urine and the feces that we don't need. And I mean, it's the food that came into the mouth comes out at the bottom, and everything that we could use from that food has been taken out of it. So our bodies are heavy. They have mass and weight, dimension. You know, I think beginning in the fourth density, you have bodies that are electrical in nature. They do not have to eat food, distill the nutrients out of the food, and and eliminate the rest, they work far more directly with light. They're light bodies, and they do not, their function is electrical rather than chemical. So I think that goes right straight through. And little by little, the bodies become more more like light and less like bodies. Until I think by sixth density, they can choose to put a body on, but they're actually light. It's simply light. So all of the characteristics of the human are in that light, the personality, the experiences, the memory of those experiences, and so forth. That's intact, but it's just that the physical vehicle that carries that is not, doesn't have to be so, what would you say, rococo. It doesn't have to be so Byzantine, so intricate, so maze-like. You know, we have a tremendously complicated physical vehicle.
You have such a good vocabulary.
And I'm not sure it's helpful. So, you know, sometimes you're not communicating when you find the exact right word, but you and three other people know the word. It doesn't help. You know, so then I'm searching for a word that's like that, but it's, you know, it's entry level. And sometimes I can't find one. So, I mean, I think, I know when I was writing 101, The Choice, I was determined to make it an entry level book. And I had to have a second pair of eyes on me, and I'd have to run through a chapter two, three times after my friend who taught English as a second language would say, you know, this is not a word people know, and this is too long a sentence, and that's not an effective way to say that, you know, and he just got me so straight and cleaned up, you know, and I think it really is an entry-level book. But I was amazed at how hard it was to write entry-level prose, because I was used to just writing what came into my mind. And truthfully, I don't communicate with everybody well. I need to have less of a vocabulary and more of a feeling for the Ernest Hemingway approach of, you know, short words, simple words, clear meaning, and then let the material carry it. And I hope that's what I ended up doing in 101.
Terry, are you there? Hello, Terry. Are you on mute, Terry? We don't hear you. Terry has...
I know she was there earlier.
Terry has disappeared, I know. Well, come say hello when you're ready. She was...
Okay,
she was,
I'm there. I turned the mute off. Okay, here I
am. We hear you now.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Terry didn't want to talk too much because she's got a flu going, and but I know she has some memories of spiders, spider planets. Don't you, Terry? Don't you have some memories of spiders?
Yeah, there was one planet where I remember landing on that planet, and I'm not even sure I was running my own incident, but the person that was running the incident had trouble with a flying saucer, and it had to land on this planet, which where they didn't land. And they were looking at it, and they thought that it was covered with runways. But as they got closer, it was a canopy of spider webs. And the spiders were huge, and they landed there in the middle of that, and the people were all, they opened the door, and they were all like, oh my God, you know, it's like, what should we do now?
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to call for help to come and get them, but it didn't work out, and the trouble with the spacecraft, after it landed, it eventually exploded, and they weren't able to get help. But anyway, it was a really scary incident, and I just it was really clear, like it was like a movie to hear that described and sort of remote view it.
You know, I was just thinking, probably 20,000 years from now, we will all be doing another radio show. somewhere else in the universe, and Carla will be saying, I had this regression, and I was on this planet that was called Earth, and there were all these chemtrails in the sky. You know, one of the channelings that came up, they said, you and I had worked very closely together somewhere in the past doing this kind of work. I'm trying to remember what planet they said. It might have been Arcturus, it might have been Andromeda, but that we were like old buddies. So here we are again. Now, you know, the amazing thing is, I don't think that all this stuff is necessary. Some people get very much into like, oh my God, there were spider planets, there were this planets, there were those planets. I think what's amazing is that this reality, that all of these things, including this one, are all fleeting. And we make it so big and so important, and yet no matter how big and important we make it, it's going to be fleeting by. We're all going to die. And that when you start to integrate that, really integrate it, life looks different. It's like there's no more big deals. It's like it's all just, well,
like
how do we
school.
Yeah, well, how do we make a contribution? Let's make sure we help lots of people graduate, and then we're going to go on and have another life in another world somewhere, and we'll probably choose where we go at that point. And we choose to say, how can I make the greatest contribution? Right. You know, one of the things that gives your life meaning, one of the things that makes life worth living is the value you create for others. It could even be one other. It could even be, it doesn't have to be huge amounts. But when somebody else values the fact that you're alive and it enhances their life and they feel your life energy and you know they're feeling it and you're feeling their life energy, you have a reason to be here. I mean, of a high purpose.
Oh, you certainly do. I remember being at a funeral not too long ago, just a couple, 3 months ago. The guy had, he'd owned horses. He had a farm. He worked all his life from when he graduated to the time that he retired at the age of 65 for a hardware company. And he was in charge of making sure that the warehouse had everything it needed to give to all the various places around Louisville, Kentucky, the stuff that they needed to sell in their stores. He was not a famous man. He was not well known. He did not write any books. He did not have the kind of effect on the world that you think of as being a contributing man. But when I was at his funeral, that place was packed. People were standing along the walls, and they were people he'd known at the warehouse, people he'd known from the horse business, racing, people that were from his church, people that had just met him in life and loved him, people from his alma mater, University of Louisville. He never missed a game. You know, all the environments that he had in his life showed up, and you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that this man's life was full of the giving and receiving of love. It was there, right, just in the people that wanted to say bye. I think one great thing that happens when you really get an awareness of your mortality is that it makes life so much more precious. every mm-hmm. morning. You're just so grateful to be alive and in this environment where you can still do some good, maybe. So you get up and give it a whack because you've got the chance, you know. And if you don't realize you have the chance, well, things do just go by in a fleeting way. And they fleet away anyway. You're so right, Wynn. It's an ephemeral world. And, you know, we're just here a moment. I sometimes think we're here in the last second of our lives, but the second is taking a while.
Mm. Let's see if anyone wants to ask a question. Well, we'll start out on the conference line. And I don't know the number for BBS. I know people can call BBS. If you're tuned into BBS, look at their homepage and feel free to dial in and we'll address your question. But let me do the conference line and see if anyone has a question. Just a moment here.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Right. Everyone's unmuted. Anyone want to come up with a question?
Yes, I would like to. Can you hear me?
That sounds like Sedona Alan Painter. Am I right? Is that Alan in Sedona?
No, I'm Bill Geisking from Denver. Does that sound
Bill? Hi, Bill. You sound like Alan in Sedona. I shouldn't be so smart.
Oh,
hi, Bill.
I must have a twin.
Yeah,
okay,
go ahead,
first of all, I want to say how much I appreciate all your efforts, and I want to tell Carla I've been a long-term fan of hers, and I'm very surprised she sounds so young. Her voice is so young. But I would like to ask a question. When in your work you put the Elohim and the Ra together as sublogies on this side of the prime creator. And I'm surprised about Ra because I always thought of Ra through the readings of Carla that is a six density complex. And I never saw it as a co-creator. Can that be explained a bit?
Hello? Hi.
Carla?
I know.
Well, I can't explain it because I'm not the one that put those two things together. Perhaps you ought to take this and win.
Maybe I better try. Okay. Well, you know what? First of all, if you're trying to figure out what's true and just quote channelings, you'll probably not succeed in figuring out what's true.
Okay?
You know what? I got to put my phone on another charger or I'm going to go out. But what I get and what has come through in my work, and it may be different from Carla's work or her original Ra stuff, is that the Ra group stands out. It starts out one place, and there's many of... Like, for example, could say, I might be Ra in third density, and there could be Ra in fourth density, and there could be Ra in fifth density and sixth density. So maybe at the highest level, it's the Ra starts at sixth density and fans out. And they need to fan out. That's how, if they're going to penetrate this realm, they need to connect with the realm on some level vibrationally that they're penetrating, if that makes sense. Does that
okay,
make sense?
I'll sit and think about that one for a while. It's just the... Thank you very much.
I do actually have something to add here. I've noticed that the Elohim describe themselves as co-creators, and I think that fits in with what I know of angels, in that the archangels, the highest orders of angels, it's very hierarchical, are like guardians of the planet and you know, have never left the infinite creator and are full of that creator energy, and they probably have input into the sun's, you know, decisions on how to create the archetypal mind of the planet. But that co-creatorship has not been something that I've seen in any of the readings from the Confederation. They simply say that the creator is a mystery, and that they are devoted to the Creator, because the Creator's vibration and frequency is that of unconditional love. So basically, according to the cosmology of the Law of One and the Confederation in general, we are all co-creators, because we are all sparks of the Creator. And you know, we all make our own universes. I wake up in the morning and I see the same thing that other people see, but it gives me joy, and sometimes it gives other people less than that. So I think that, you know, we create from the get-go. We create how we interpret the things that come to us. And according to the way we respond, we live in a universe of joy and peace and happiness, or we live in a universe where everything goes wrong all the time, and we're victims and we have a hard time, or anything in between those two, you know, but we get to decide. We get to choose. Oh, by the way, if you want to call, it's 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511.
I have a question. When?
Yes.
Hello?
Carla, you know that number you just had to call?
Uh-huh.
I think that's the number that I'm on. So, I think that's... So.
Well, they may have a switchboard, Wynn. More than one person.
Are we able to ask questions right now?
Yeah, we can hear you. Who is that speaking? Who is that?
It's Marielle.
Yes, Marielle.
Hi, nice to speak with you all. I have a question that kind of interacts with the first gentleman's question. I just came on the line. My understanding is that this Elohim, that the Elohim is, and Ra are the, or one of the hierarchies. I think the Elohim is supposed to be higher. I haven't studied this, as you know, in a year or so, but that it's that we are theists, meaning that there is one God, one Creator within the Elohim realm, being part of that one Creator. Is that, am I off? And also, the basic question was, are we theists? Are you theists, meaning there's one God, one Creator, or not? That's my question.
I would say I'm not a theorist, a theist. I'm
theist,
a paradigm.
Theist.
I was trying to make a pun.
No, theist. When?
I was
theist. T-H-E-I-S-T. Like theist to me is it's a term for believing in one God as Creator, rather than
what?
A multi-theist would say that they're a monotheist is somebody like Hindus that believe there's many, many gods. But I'm wondering, is this group a theist group? Do you believe that there's one creator, and then there's these different, or even if Elohim is the creator, you know, it's subdivisions of the Creator, but it would still be one God? Or can you explain that? Because the gentleman was asking about sixth dimension and co-creation and things like that, not about us creating our own reality here on Earth. That was what the train of thought the other woman, which I understand what she was saying, but is the essence of what you believe is there a creator, one creator?
Marielle, I think to answer a question like that, for me, you have to get on one side of a duality or another. The question itself is a dualistic question. It would be like wave-particle thing in the Heisenberg theory. Is it a wave? Is it a particle? Sometimes it behaves like a particle. Sometimes it behaves like a wave. If everything is one, if everything is one energy in the universe, do we really exist, or are we just that one energy? We exist. We experience ourselves as unique in our own little world, yet everything is one. So, try to give an answer to that. The just...
Well, I mean, there is one creator, then,
well,
in my view.
Well, you know what? I mean,
the
I can tell...
creation would mean, yes, it is. We are all one. We all are part of one creator. Does that make
That's
sense?
That's true, but I think that there is one creator in both
okay,
the Elohim's philosophy, since they're angels, they are pointed towards devotion to the one creator. And, of course, in the Law of One, in the Confederation philosophy, if all is one, then there must be one creator. And the creation is all one, but the creator is not simply the sum of the parts. The creator is more than the sum of the parts, which is why I said even sixth density entities say that the creator is shrouded in mystery. And
I understand. I think
we
that's
all
very,
are shrouded
that's clear
in
answer.
Mystery.
Thank you.
I have a question, Carla. I know that Ra'an has given you and channeled through you a lot of information, but I'm curious to know, and this is Gina from Oahu, Hawaii, I'm curious to know what, Carla, is the most memorable thing that Ra'an has told you?
Well, first of all, don't use the word Ra'an with Carla, okay? Not...
I even know that.
It's not a word that she uses. Mm-hmm. Carla has channeled the Ra group, okay? She has channeled the Quo group. Well, she doesn't say Quo. Koi group. And
Koi
group is a combination of three group entities. They identify themselves that way. So rephrase your question so that you address her with the way her sources identify themselves, okay?
Okay. Carla, I would like to know, please, out of the several groups that you have channeled, what message do you feel is the most memorable to you?
I want to take you.
Carla, are you there? Hello, Carla. Are we on the air?
We can hear you, Wynn.
You can hear me? Hang on a second. Who's calling me?
It's 504.
Jerry?
Yes.
Hang on a second.
Now, good. Now we can hear you. I can't hear you, but I can hear Don, and we're on the air. Yeah, let me give you this.
Hello?
Hey, Wynn, it's Carla.
Yeah. What happened?
I got cut off. I just suddenly, my phone went dead and the dial tone started ringing and that lady was asking me a question. So I apologize. It was not on purpose. It's just one of those things about me and telephones. So anyway, if you could bring me up to speed, I'd be glad to respond.
Well, you know what? I got
knocked
off.
You take care of it for me.
Hang on a second. Now, I'm just going to, like, figure out how to do this. I'm going to now... Hang on just a moment. Hello? Carla?
Yeah?
Oh, wait a second.
You want me to call in on Skype?
No. Can you? I think we can hear you now. Can you hear Carla?
I'm talking. Can you hear me?
They can hear you. The problem is that I'm putting the phone lines together. So,
well, should I hang up and let Seth call me back?
No. It's not your problem. It's my problem because my phone line
which was a conference call. I was conferencing the conference call, and that phone line dropped after you dropped because I came out looking for you. This is what happens in this realm. Somebody gets lost, and somebody goes looking for them, and they get lost, and the third person says, where did they go? And here we go, we're stuck. But somebody said, that's why you carry your cell phone in Walmart. I think if you're going to be smart, you need a cell phone in each pocket, just in case. But in any case, somehow or another, we're on the line, but I'm going to have to repeat a question, okay? People can hear you, Carla, because I'm putting the Terry's phone up to the microphone of the conference call.
Oh, my.
And they're hearing me because I'm on Terry's line, but you can't hear the conference call because I hear them. They're in my ear. So does somebody else have a question, and I'll repeat it here? Okay, now Gina is asking, out of everything you've ever channeled, what is the most memorable message you've ever had?
Well, I probably would say that there was something in the very first session with those of Ra, and it's not what everybody always quotes. It's not the All is One quote, which, of course, is the very heart of the material, but what it is in that first session, I'm getting it up on the computer now. Aren't computers wonderful? And this has stayed with me, and it has influenced my life from that moment to this. I work all day, every day, to be attentive to my thoughts because of this quote, and I'll read it for you. Let us for a moment consider thought. What is it, my friends, to take thought? Took you then thought today? What thoughts did you think today? What thoughts were part of the original thought today? In how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained? And was service freely given? You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. You are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. You are dancing thoughts. You move your body, your mind, and your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns, for you have not completely grasped the concept that you are part of the original thought. That's the quote. I love that quote. The original thought that they say over and over again is the thought of unconditional love. So we are part of a universe of love. Our thoughts, if they have virtue, for service to others, polarity, are part of the original thought. The creation abides in love. We abide in love. I love that quote. Thanks for asking.
That is a beautiful quote. Thank you for sharing. Let me see if we have another question. Muted everybody because we're getting too much background noise. Do we have another question? Pardon me? Oh, yeah, what's the phone line for VBS? 530. 413-4515. Okay. That's the other one for VBS. We only have a couple more minutes. And anyone on the line have another question? Is that Maya? Okay, Maya, tell me your question, and I have to repeat it. You're not on the air right now. What? Regarding what? Telepathy? Well, I don't know if anyone here is an expert on telepathy, but because we're really talking about the channel material, the raw material and the Elohim material, whatever. But what's your question, and we'll see what happens. Okay. What Maya is saying is that she believes telepathy works on intention. I'm not sure that's true, but in her experience, she ends up getting telepathic thoughts from people that she doesn't really intend to. And it sounds like that's not a pleasant experience, that it interrupts her. And then people that she wants to get telepathic thoughts from, she's not getting them from. Is that right? Do I have that correct, Maya? Okay. Listen, Maya, we're going to run out of time. We've got about 1 minute. So let me let Carla answer that, or Terry, or anyone else who feels qualified, okay?
All right. I think that the way telepathy works is by concept. And some people think in concepts. Some people are right-brained and they have insight and they think in concepts. Some people are left-brained and linear and logical and they think in terms of ideas. If you're trying to get hold of, trying to communicate with somebody who's linear and logical, it's probably not going to work. It'll possibly work, and sometimes, of course, artists especially are tremendously powerful senders, and they don't really even mean to. They don't know that they're broadcasting. But they are. So I think that's probably the reason you can do it with some people and not with others. It's not something we're trained to do here. I believe it is something that is inherently possible for the human.
Mm-hmm. I think, just to give my little take on it, is that as we walk through life and we're around people, as you start to become more spiritually evolved, you automatically become more sensitive to people. And it's like everyone's broadcasting. So you feel they're broadcast. And you hear all kinds of things going through your mind. And oftentimes it sounds like you think it's your own stuff, because it's hard to distinguish sometimes between what's you and what's someone else. And at a certain point, one needs to learn how to shield themselves so that you don't have lots of transient thoughts and feelings and everything go through you in the course of your day, because it starts leaving you off balance, particularly if you're trying to hold a steady space. Terry, you want to say anything on that? There's no one online. Terry says she won't say anything. But in any case, I hope that answered Maya's question, and it's 7:51, so I think we are going to sign off for the evening. And Carla has a website, llresearch.org. She's got thousands of pages of her channeled material on her website. I believe she has one of the most accurate sources of information and cosmology available on how things work in different dimensions, and particularly who are some of our major helpers in other dimensions, and reading their material helps access those guys. Anything you want to say, Carla?
I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and asking such great questions and saying I love you all.
Great. Well, we'll see you next month, and we'll see everyone else next time we do.